everybody. This is Inside Geocaching HQ from Seattle. I am Chris Ronan. RockChalk is my geocaching username. Thank you for downloading our podcast. This episode is a good one. I so enjoyed the conversation that you are about to hear with Jeremy Irish and Brian Roth, who along with Elias Alvord are the co-founders of Geocaching HQ. Brian is HQ's president, Jeremy is the senior vice president, and the guy who launched geocaching.com. This year, of course, is the 20th anniversary of geocaching. It was a challenging year, to say the least, for everyone, but we hope that you might get a smile from listening to these two guys share some fun stories from the past 20 years and look ahead to the future of our great game. So here they are, Jeremy Irish and Brian Roth. All right, well, this is very exciting. This is the first time we've had Brian and Jeremy on the HQ podcast. And of course, the reason, the 20th anniversary of geocaching this year, which unfortunately, as we all know, the year has been messy and some of the celebrations that we had hoped for have not happened, but we're hoping that they will happen in the future. But still, it is an opportunity to kind of look back at what has happened over these past 20 years and to think about what will come in the future. And so appreciate both of you guys doing this. Jeremy, you and I have talked before on the podcast just about how you launched the website and then, you know, just in very general terms about how you got together with working at the same company like you did with Brian and Elias. But I'm just, one thing I've kind of wondered about over time is why did you reach out to them specifically?
Well, I mean, at the time, the three of us were working really closely together at Savvy Shopper. And, you know, I got to know Elias and Brian really well. I started out as their client. They're my client, or the company I was working for. So, you know, I just had a really strong relationship with the two of them. And I think a lot of businesses that get started, it really comes down to knowing and trusting the people that you start the company with. And that's how they become successful, because they pick up on the places where you don't have that capability. So it was like, you know, I realized at that time that Elias had a really strong networking background, a really smart like person I could bounce technical questions and ideas and stuff like that with. And he had the technical chops to be able to put together a system that would even support geocaching. Because the first time I was running the site, it was in my spare bedroom in Bellevue. So with very low bandwidth, and, you know, I was like, how do I take this site that was just slash dotted and put it on a better computer and get that out onto the internet so it won't break? And, you know, that's some stuff that I just had no idea how to do. And then on Brian's side, he had the legal chops, which is awesome. The operations chops. So, you know, things that I really didn't understand, or just, you know, just things that weren't in my wheelhouse, you know, of experience. He was able to take on that stuff. And I'm also, you know, not necessarily a people person. So, and Brian definitely is. So there was like that social part of it too, that really, you know, enamored me to, you know, to have Brian, you know, join up and start this, this company, which really was, you know, initially just running a hobby site, you know, so there wasn't really a lot of strategy going on, you know, to figure out how we're going to run a company and, you know, what this thing is going to be. There was no business plan put together for the company. It was really just, hey, I'm kind of scared. This is getting a little bit bigger than I expected it to be. And I really need help. And you guys are awesome. So would you like to join? I know it's kind of a dumb idea. You know, that's kind of what people have. They're like, what is this silly idea? This won't make money. And I'm like, I don't even know. It's not really about making money. It's just about creating something fun. Would you like to be involved in this? And, you know, initially it was a smaller project, and, you know, there was a lot of light touches that would happen while, you know, I was programming the site. But as, you know, the company and as the game started getting bigger and bigger, you could see those challenges coming at us, and to have those two strong partners involved in it really rounded us out and, you know, made it so I honestly continue doing it, because, you know, it's a lot of work when, you know, you're working on this hobby site. And the excitement that you get from people going out and finding geocaches and getting active in it, and then that community being built, there's a lot of excitement around it. there's also a lot of low points, you know, where you're just like, why am I doing this? I'm spending all my weekends working on this and my evenings, and I also have to do another job, you know, and I know that there's a lot of like great feeling around, you know, the game itself, but it's, you know, it has a takes a toll on your social life and your personal life. And to have two partners saying like, you know, hey, it's worth it. You know, how can I help? And, you know, them pitching in and working through it made it so it is today. So, you know, I always joke like, you know, I want to quit every so often. And then, you know, Brian and Elias will, you know, talk me off the ledge. Not so much today, but, you know, in the early days, there's a lot of moments where you're just like, you know, I'm done. And they're like, no, you know, just chill. It's just like a bad day, you know? So that's kind of why it started that way. And I think, you know, I've learned over time that companies that are very successful have more than two partners. And I think that really has to do with tie breaking. There's always, if there's two people that are not connecting, you know, on a topic or something, there's always a tiebreaker. There's always a Switzerland, you know, that can come in and help that conversation or turn that conversation to a positive way.
I don't know what the exact stats are, but I can't imagine that a whole lot of partnerships last 20 or more years for a variety of reasons. You know, just the business maybe doesn't go the right way, but then also personalities not meshing together the way that you would like. How has it worked with you guys to keep this going for this long and to still have this strong partnership after such a long amount of time?
From my perspective, I think that it's sort of fluctuated over the years. You know, there were times where, you know, the three of us wouldn't exactly get along on a specific topic, but there was always this underlying sense of like mutual respect. Like I've always said, when Jeremy and Elias approached me and asked me to join, you know, help them start this company to support a hobby, I just remember it wasn't so much about what we were going to be doing. I was just excited to work with the two of them because I knew who they were. We were already friends. We had worked together for a while. Like I knew what some of their strengths were and personality wise, we already clicked. And so it felt like this opportunity to start something cool with friends. And as Jeremy mentioned, it didn't feel like there was a whole lot of potential. It was like, oh, hey, here's this hobby. It's outdoor recreation and technology, two things that we're all kind of passionate about, and we're friends, and between the three of us, like, we can each do different things, so we could probably do the basics to get this thing up and running. Like, what do you say? And it was like, oh, cool, like, I'm gonna get to work with my friends and have this little side project, and, you know, we'll see what it becomes. Here we are 20 years later, and like a question like, how did we make it? You know, I think foundationally, the fact that we were friends, the fact that we had respect for each other, and everybody sort of brought a different set of talents to the company and to the partnership really went a long way. And so, you know, two things that I would say is, one, if the question that we faced related to a topic where there was some expertise, I think that we were really good about deferring to the resident expert on that topic. And the second thing is, I always knew that if Jeremy and Elias agreed on something and I found myself at odds with that, I really needed to reconsider my opinion because I had a lot of faith in what the two of them thought and how they looked at things. And so we could always have good conversations where I was able to bring like, hey, here's how I'm thinking about it. And if they would say, well, here's another way to think about it, and by the way, we're both aligned on this, or here's three different ways to think about it, there was always this sense of, well, let's try and figure it out together, as opposed to, well, you have to do it this way because I said so. You know, that was never really the thing. And so, you know, one of the other things is, especially in the early days, when we were all working for the same company, that company, Savvy Shopper, went out of business, then we all went to work for a promotional marketing company, which was Sunrise. But we would meet in the mornings pretty frequently at like 6 a.m. before work, and we would go out wakeboarding or water skiing or whatever, the three of us. And so we would start the day by kind of playing together, and we would, you know, water ski or wakeboard for a little while. And then we just sit and float in the boat and just kind of talk about like, hey, what's going on today? What are the challenges? How are things going? And I think it allowed us to really build a strong relationship in the early days based on friendship and business that has allowed us to kind of navigate, you know, both the calm and rough waters that we've seen over the years.
Yeah, I think we've been fortunate that we haven't seen a lot of adversity in the company either. We always kind of had a backup plan in the early days. So it was more like all the interesting things that came at us were less, you know, big, challenging, like doom and gloom kind of things, and more just really super weird problems,
you know, opportunities. Like,
yeah, I mean, they became opportunities, but, you know, when the National Park Service found a geocache on the property and they're telling us, you know, to ban it in all national parks, you know, we're like, okay, well, here's a challenge, but it's a surmountable challenge. You know, it's not like none of the particular challenges were like the doom and gloom type of challenges, you know, so, and they're always interesting. So I think we always had an interesting problem to address, and for me, that makes me happy. For some reason, I used to have a fire bucket, for example, on my desk for a long time that I put pens in and stuff. And because I was always feeling we were doing fire drills. And you know, there was a moment where I decided to retire that fire can, because I felt like we were at the point now where we were beyond doing the fire drills. But sometimes I still miss, you know, the fire drills, you know, that just kept you on your toes.
I think a number of the challenges that we had in the early days, like the one Jeremy described with the national parks, really related to the fact that it was this totally new hobby and people didn't know what to make of it. So when it came to the national parks, you know, they're like, oh, people are leaving things in the park, you know, over a period of 24 hours. That's against our rules. We need to shut it down. And in a similar sense, you know, when we first went to get business insurance, for the most part, nobody would insure us because they said, we don't understand what you're doing. Like, what kind of liability does this present, et cetera. And we, you know, explained to them, here's all the work that we've done to present the company in the right way. But it took a sort of a very special partnership with an insurance agent that we met who went out and did a really good job of kind of explaining what it was that we were doing so that we could actually get our first policy. But it was, we dealt with that along the way in different forms. And I think, you know, it's interesting to be here 20 years later when, you know, if something happens in a park, we'll often hear from somebody and they'll say, oh, you know, we know what geocaching is. You know, it looks like this person didn't follow your guidelines and the cache looks like something dangerous. Can you please do a better job of explaining to people that what's appropriate and what's not appropriate versus where it was, you know, 15, 18 years ago, where it's like, hey, somebody, you know, we had to close off the street because somebody placed a cache that looked inappropriate and we're going to have to shut you guys down. And it was like, wait a second, you know, that's not exactly what's happening. So there, I think there were a variety of things like that over the years that we had to deal with fires. I remember that fire bucket. It's funny. As you mentioned it, it's something I haven't thought about in years, but I do remember it.
Isn't it amazing too, given that early adversity with the national park system, that now there's a Find Your Parks geo tour with geocaches at national parks all over the U.S.
Well, yeah, I went geocaching at Rock Creek Park in Oregon, outside Portland. And it was just really cool to be able to go on this hike and, you know, seeing geocaches that were placed by the local parks and in a relationship with the local geocachers to do the cache and trash out event at that park. So there's like all these little decisions that we made in the early days to try to make this game family friendly and open and available and not secret. That was really important to us to have that vision. And that created a lot of challenges in that we had to work with a lot of different parks and a lot of landowners and stuff like that. So we kind of took the hard route and the really the long-term vision of it, as opposed to making it some, you know, secret society game that's violating a lot of rules and laws, you know, to play the game. And I think as a result of that, we see the results of that effort in, you know, parks that encourage geocaches. They even place their own and they host the geocaches. And as a result, those caches are better maintained, they're in better places, and they're just more enjoyable overall.
Along those lines, you know, hindsight being 2020 now, you can sometimes business owners can look back and say, here are moments where we made a very important decision. Maybe we didn't know it at the time, but in retrospect, this was really important. You've mentioned a couple of things just there, but are there other things that come to mind for either of you where you look back and you realize, you know, either for the game or for the business, this was a fork in the road, or this was a very important thing where, in retrospect, that was a really good decision that we made that led us down a better path?
Well, I'll say the accidental one was the reviewers, the volunteers that are involved with geocaching. Initially, the reason why I asked the first volunteer to help was because I was just overwhelmed with reviewing geocaches. I didn't really have any forethought as to what volunteering for geocaching would look like. Today, you know, now there's a community of volunteers around the world that, you know, review caches. They know their local laws. They give a lot of good positive scrutiny to the geocaches that are placed. And, you know, at the time, you know, we could have gone in a direction where we, you know, reviewed them all internally and, you know, or created some kind of, you know, rule system or AI algorithm or something like that, you know, decides whether or not these are okay, or rely on the community to report them. Deciding to have folks and trusting them with the ability to go in and edit any geocache, that was a big deal, you know, because that, and trusting in the community that you've never actually met in real life to, you know, be active in that. I think that was a big one. And, you know, as a result, now we have this, you know, community of volunteers around the world that make this geocaching game better.
I think another example would be, you know, in the early days, we started to see people who were suggesting, either in the forums or elsewhere, like, hey, when you go out geocaching, bring a trash bag and pick up the cans along the way. And, you know, when we heard that, we said, oh, wow, this is a really good idea. And so many of the good ideas have come from the community, of course, and paying attention to what they're doing. But we said, you know, how can we come up with a program to encourage this? And the beginning of Cash In, Trash Out, and having an international Cash In, Trash Out day, those were early decisions that just felt like, oh, this makes sense. Sure, if we encourage people to pick up trash while they're geocaching, then, you know, we'll have a positive impact on the game board and the world. And if you consider now, so many years later, with, you know, thousands of Cash In, Trash Out events and people going out and just making this part of their geocaching routine, the environmental impact that this global community has had as a result of us sort of just adopting something that we thought was cool because the community was doing it, you know, that's like the pebble in the pond kind of thing, where it's seemingly insignificant, but over time has become really significant. And now it's something that the community celebrates. There's, you know, a couple times a year where we're encouraging events, and, you know, it's just one of those smaller ideas that has become really impactful in a positive way.
Well, on the flip side of things, in 20 years, a few mistakes will be made here and there. Jeremy, you always had the make better mistakes tomorrow mantra. I think there was even a sign in your office to that effect. Are there, I don't know how specific you want to get, but are there things where you look back and you think, wow, I cannot believe we did that?
Well, I'd say personally, I get bored easily. You know, when new releases come out, I'm like ready for the next one. So even before anybody sees like a new feature or something like that, I'm ready to go and do something else. So I spent time like focusing on other location-based game ideas, but we would spend some resources on that and it just wouldn't pan out because geocaching just had such a gravitational pull to the company. And there's so many things that we can do to make it better that it just kept pulling me back to geocaching. So I'd say that was part of it. Like I can get distracted easily. You know, I have a t-shirt that says squirrel on it because it's like, you know, the movie Up with the dog. It's like squirrel, you know, so I'm always looking on to something else. So my distractions can sometimes have the better of me. That's one part of it. There are geocaching types in the past that we tried out and they just didn't work because they would kind of overtake the website. I think a lot of times those mistakes would lead to other ideas within the game that would be positive. So for example, you know, I love Where I Go. And I would say like Where I Go is one of those things that never really took off, but it's like on this runway where it never has to, you know, like people can continue to use Where I Go. But Where I Go was something that I had grand visions of that didn't quite come to pass. And a lot of it was the difficulty of making these cartridges and games and stuff like that. But what it's led to is, you know, the Adventures Project, which is kind of a lo-fi version of Where I Go, where it's more about the content than it is about the feature set. And I think as we, you know, continue to build for Adventures, it sort of gets more Where I Go-like. So I think it was like a vision that was way ahead of its time, still has potential today, which excites me. And, you know, the idea of using other types of technology to get people outside is always something that is back of mind for me. And that's the thing that I think geocaching does a great thing job of, is, you know, using tech, which normally brings you inside and encourages you to go outdoors and find something physical.
Yeah, I think to be fair, if we look back, there's a lot of things that could be characterized as mistakes, but it could also be characterized as learning opportunities. You know, there's no 20-year-old company that hasn't made mistakes. And I think that we've had our fair share of decisions that we made with the information that we had on hand that, you know, when more information was gathered, we realized, oh, that wasn't the best path. And so we've shut down some projects. We've built some things that we actually, you know, didn't even bring to market. But all in all, like, we've learned from those. And I think that it really helps to inform how we act today. It's like the phrase, we stand on the shoulders of giants. We kind of stand on the shoulders of those decisions that we've made in the past, right or wrong. And even some of the right ones turned out to subsequently be not an ideal situation or add additional complexities that we weren't necessarily prepared to deal with. By and large, like, you know, Jeremy talks about Squirrel and sort of the propensity to be excited about different things. I don't think it could fairly be characterized as a mistake or a disadvantage. In fact, like, that's how we come up with a lot of the great ideas, and you have to make mistakes in order to learn, in order to progress. And so, you know, I look back and I think if we're being fair with ourselves, there hasn't been one really big mistake that we're like, oh man, we never should have done that. There have been things that we've done where it's like, all right, well, we probably shouldn't have spent that money on that project, but, you know, we needed to try it to sort of learn what we needed to learn from that project. And so, you know, given where we are today and the opportunities that we have ahead of us as a company and a game and a community, it's been this sort of organic development of, as a group, as a founders group with Jeremy, Elias, and myself, and then as a company, it's really just trying to continually move the game, company, and community forward by making the best possible decisions that are aligned with our values, which are getting people off of their couches, getting them outside, giving them fun things to do. And I think as long as we look at the opportunities through the lens of solid set of values and what we're trying to accomplish, the odds are we're still aiming in the right path. We're not going to track, you know, directly on where we're supposed to be. We're sort of tacking back and forth and learning the lessons along the way. And I think we're fortunate in the fact that we haven't made a big mistake, quote unquote, that has, you know, drastically affected the community or the game or the company. And, you know, hopefully we can keep tacking in the right direction and not get too far off course. But to be fair, having Jeremy and Elias involved, having a really good senior leadership team and all of the lackeys at HQ, I think everybody understands what's at stake. And so there's so much thought and care that goes into the decision making and trying to get things right that I don't think we really expose ourselves to a lot of risk of making a massive mistake. Not that it's impossible, but we're really doing our best to make sure that it's highly improbable.
I'll give you a good funny mistake, though. In the early days, we decided to do a anniversary calendar. And we got a design firm and we did like these amazing photos for the 12 months. We even did one which took all the different photos that were on the geocaching site and made a geocaching logo as like with the smaller images.
Like a photo mosaic.
Like a mosaic, yeah. But it was all like really tiny images with the right colors, so it would make it look like the geocaching logo. And I think we had like 20,000 calendars or something. It was a ridiculous amount of calendars, and we could not get rid of these calendars. We had so many of them. And, you know, at the time, buying that many calendars was a big financial deal. So I don't know, we probably still have calendars around today, but we were starting to give them away with, you know, when people would buy something on the shop site, we would just, you know, throw a couple calendars in the box just to get rid of them, you know, because those things are time limited. You know, so, I mean, they could be collector's items now, but, you know, they were like a lot of time, you know. We also had antenna balls. We had those forever. And then people started, you know, manufacturing vehicles without antennas. So, yeah, we had a ton of those, but they're cute.
I wish I had, I have one of those calendars left that was saved by my mother-in-law. And she's like, oh, do you still need this? I'm like, I haven't seen one of these in 10 years or whatever. And then those antenna balls were really cool. They were the signal heads, but yeah, then cars without antennas, you know, thankfully small mistakes or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah. I'd say signal was probably my favorite, not mistake, the big success. It was just, you know, just a funny idea that now we have, you know, mascot costumes in multiple countries now that travel around when we have events.
And I think probably on our last conversation, you and I, Jeremy, talked about Signal, or maybe we didn't. I'd have to go back and look, but maybe just briefly, since you mentioned it, for people that might not be familiar, how Signal came to be.
I was just trying to find a mascot for the game, and we wanted to find a mascot that usually when you create a mascot, it's kind of the product. You know, with like a face, you know, so we didn't want to do a GPS device because I realized that at some point, even then we knew that GPS technology would be kind of like a clock. So it would be in everything. So you wouldn't really be buying a GPS. You would just have a device that has GPS functionality in it. Kind of came up, but we came up with the idea of using a frog because it's kind of, it's nationwide, it's international. So there's frogs everywhere around the world. It means nature. And then we stuck an antenna on its head, you know, to represent the technology side. So Signal basically knows where he is and where he wants, he can go, but he doesn't really understand the technology. So we always said we had rules like he doesn't talk. He only points, he doesn't use a device. He'll gesture at a GPS device, but he won't use the GPS device because he is a GPS. Just silly things like that. You know, we created these arbitrary rules that I think are still followed today.
I was going to say, I learned a few new things just now.
And now we go to, you know, international mega events and there's full groups of signals dressed in all different, all different costumes and people have them attached to their backpacks and trackables. And it's really phenomenal what, you know, that small decision in the early days has become this, you know, kind of subculture within the global community. It's both fascinating and just super cool.
Yeah. And the character itself was based on an initial t-shirt design that one of our first hires, Coco, designed for us. Originally, Signal was just a head with an antenna. I was going to use it in another, talk about squirrel projects, but I was going to use it in another project that showed you presence. So I hired somebody in Eastern Europe to design little icons, and it was just a little frog head with an antenna on it. And then she took the antenna head and turned it into Signal, which then, you know, turned into the character. And then she was the designer for the Signal character for quite a while, you know, before the company took it on.
And the first image of Signal's head we had on, I think there were two lunch boxes, and there used to be one in Elias's basement where we had our first office. I wonder if he still has it.
It was a product called Ground Control that never really went anywhere, but that's where the original Signal came from. That was going to be the icon for it.
Oh, there needs to be a Signal lunchbox, I think, now. I see a new product for the shop. I wonder if you guys could talk about how the company and especially the founders have tried to balance the needs of the company and the game and the community. You know, Brian, you and I have talked in the past, I think on the podcast, about Geocaching HQ as a company, and it needs to be profitable in order to do the things that it wants to do for the game and for the community. But gosh, there's, I'm sure, a million decisions that y'all have had to make over the course of 20 years to try to balance those needs. And I'm wondering what your philosophy has been, the three of you, and if that philosophy has evolved over the years that you've worked together.
I mean, it feels like we always started out with, when Jeremy built the first version of the website, the game was in existence in a slightly different form, you know, the Great American GPS Stash Hunt. And so I think we've always approached it like we don't own the game of geocaching, just like nobody owns the game of baseball or football. Instead, we get to participate in this global community. We have a specific role. The community volunteers have a specific role. Cache hiders, moderators, cache finders, coin manufacturers, vendors, everybody sort of participates in different ways. And we've always felt like we earn the right to be the global headquarters for the game through, you know, dedicated service to the community by giving the community the right features, by showing respect for the game, by not trying to take advantage of it, and really just by contributing. And so we've always felt like it is in the interest of the global community and the game to have a company that has resources to go and build enhancements on the game and provide support and provide, you know, teams that could be responsive to questions from new users or landowners or law enforcement. And so we always knew that we had to generate revenue. And in the really early days, you know, the three of us were working for free. You know, we weren't getting paid anything for a number of years while we were doing this. And I remember there was a time where Jeremy came to us and he's like, look, I'm spending all my nights and weekends on this project. We either need to try and sell it to somebody, or we need to try and find a way to make money so that I don't have to do this other job and so that I can focus on this exclusively. And that was really, you know, we had to go beyond just t-shirts. And that was when we came up with the concept of a premium membership, charter membership in the early day, which was, hey, community, here's what we're trying to do. If you can help support us, well, then we're going to give you access to advanced features and functionality, none of which are actually built yet, but we're going to build them. And it's going to enable us to continue to support the game and enhance the game. And that sort of bargain between us and the community has lasted now for 20 years, where there are people around the world who choose to pay us $30 a year or 30 euros a year. And we take that money, and we've got 85 employees in the Seattle area, engineers and community engagement and marketing and finance and all that, a company whose primary goal is to support the community that effectively supports us. And I think that that's something that's been consistent for all of these years. And it seems to have worked out it's worked out well for us as a company. I think the ability to do this as a job is a dream job. Like, I can't imagine doing anything that's more fun and more exciting than supporting this global community and trying to get people outside, because we know that being in nature is good for people. It's good for the world. So we feel like we're doing this good mission. It is our occupation. So this is something that helps me, you know, pay for food and pay for my home and things like that. And so, you know, on a personal level, it works. On a company level, it works. And I think that the global community gets the benefit of all of the work that we're doing to try and make for a better game and a stronger community and just support everybody out there and getting outside and having a better life.
Yeah, I think a strong company makes for a strong game. And you know, without getting revenue, we can't hire employees and compete with companies that hire developers if we didn't have the money to do that. You know, you look at it as if this is a nonprofit, I think you'd see a lot less features, a lot less effort in the business. And that's just how I think it would end up, you know, for profit. I mean, like the NFL, if you were to look at them, you know, for football, it'd be a different kind of football game. I remember at the beginning of geocaching, you know, when I was, before I came up with like, hey, we need to make money on this because, you know, I'm spending all of my personal time working on it and it's kind of taken over my whole life. You know, I need help. And the only way to do that is to hire it. I looked at ways to raise money. And one was a donation concept, you know, so at the time you could click a button and donate money to the site, nothing like there are today. But nobody would click on it. You know, I think everybody thought that everybody else was supporting the game. And there needed to be a way to make that happen. And a membership made the most sense. Advertising didn't. We learned even today with the recent, I think, what's the documentary that came out? Social Dilemma? I think it is.
Social dilemma, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where they talk about, like, if you're trying to support the experience on advertising, then your content that you're selling is your customers. You know, and I didn't really think that that would be the best for the game to, you know, try to motivate us to sell content, you know, our customers to other people. It made more sense to say this is an adventure we're all involved in, so there should be an adventurers club of people that are supporting it. And as that, you know, that membership increases, then the funds increase and they allow us to create more and more functionality. So as more people play and the game gets more complicated, there are complicated solutions to complicated problems, and you need to have funds to do that. You need to have, you know, a strong company that can exist and continue to exist to support that, you know, growing population of geocachers. You know, initially it was just like, oh my goodness, we need money because I can't do this anymore on my own. We need to hire people and, like, get to a reasonable lifestyle. To now we have a strong business that's self-healing, that have people in the company that love the game, that are paid adequately. And considering that we haven't been greedy as a, you know, business owners, you know, put that money back into the company and build that business. And that's what we did for a very long time. We didn't even change our salary for the longest time until basically our accountant said, you have to, because you need to be taxed more. We're like, okay, well, I guess we need to start paying ourselves more. But we wanted to take that and put it back into the company and hire people. And for the longest time, we had people at the company that were paid much higher than we were, because we wanted to have the top talent be able to make the right features and content to make this game better.
I wonder if you guys could share any of your favorite memories of your time with the community over the last 20 years. I was thinking, Jeremy, you said earlier on that you don't consider yourself a people person, and yet you have attended so many mega events and probably maybe become more of a, or challenged yourself to be more of a people person over the years. And then Brian, I've seen you at all of the events that we've attended together over the years, and clearly you love that aspect of it. But for both of you, could you talk about that part of your role at HQ? Because I don't imagine it was something that you could have imagined when this whole thing first started, that you would have these opportunities to engage with people from all over the world through your job.
I mean, I'll say that I think Jeremy's become much more of a people person over the years as a result of geocaching, whether he feels sort of forced into it or has come to embrace it. But you're right. For me, it's really one of the coolest aspects of not just the job, but being a part of the community. And I think anybody who's a part of the geocaching community, who has attended an event and interacted with other community members, comes to realize just how special the people are. You know, the game is the game, but when you combine it with this global community of sort of welcoming, friendly people who want to talk to you, who want to share their hobby with you, whether you're brand new or whether you're, you know, truly engaged, you kind of realize how special it is. So for me, I love to go to events. I love to get to talk to people and find out, how did they learn about the game? What do they take from the game? You know, what do they enjoy about it? You know, what do they want to see from us? What kind of ideas do they have? But just, we've built so many friendships over the years, that not just us from HQ building friendships, but look around at the geocachers, and this group has become sort of worldly and interconnected. So a geocacher in New York can have friends in Spain and Switzerland and France and Germany. And it's not just like colleagues, but true friends, where we care about each other. And we, these days when we can't see each other, we're interacting on social media and asking, how's your family? What are you doing? Have you found any cool caches? And so it's truly created this community from what was just about nothing to begin with. And it's not just any community, it's a special community, because it crosses political, social, religious, it crosses all those lines and kind of brings everybody together, specifically in the spirit of this game. And I think it's a real, it's an honor for us to be a part of it. Some of my favorite memories would be everything from, like, the first event that we had at our 9th and Lenora office, where we got some like geocaching cookies, and we invited the local community and people came in, and it was kind of our first non-Elias's basement office. And we had, I don't know, 40 or 50 geocachers just stop by, and we got to meet them and like, hey, here's our little HQ. And I think there were 8 or 9 of us in the whole company, all the way up to, you know, Jeremy and I attended the Prague Giga, where they launched the European maze exhibit. And there were thousands and thousands of people there. And just to look around and see all these people smiling and getting out and interacting and playing it was really special to see this is what, you know, not just us, but the whole community has co-created over so many years. Those things for me helped me to understand like just the importance of what not only we've done, but the community has done and what has been created that brings so much benefit to so many people all over the world.
So now that you've heard from the extrovert, I'll talk about the introvert. I just built it and then, you know, we started the company. I built it in a bedroom, you know, so I was not interacting with anybody, and I always expected the game to be something where you would just sort of see people in the logs and you'd start seeing those local logs and maybe exchanging emails and stuff like that. So I never really thought that at the beginning that there would be events and there'd be communities that would come together in real space and do these events. So two things I like about it. One is, as an introvert, it's really hard to strike up a conversation, but the conversation has already been started when you go to a geocaching event. So it's pretty easy to have a conversation. Other side of that is when you go to an event with, 1,000 people, even 100 people, and they all want to talk to you, it's really hard. It's kind of like if you've ever been married, you go to a wedding or you're part of that wedding, it's kind of a whirlwind of discussions. And you kind of, at the end of the day, you're exhausted because you get to talk with so many people, and it's not a negative or a positive thing. It's just how it is. And you have lots of positive conversations and great experiences doing that, but it can be pretty tiring to go through there, especially for an introvert. It's a draining experience. But I am grateful for the opportunity to be able to go and meet with all of these people. And it's a reassuring and heartwarming thing to see all of these people that play the game and appreciate it. And I don't, you know, I'm have the humility to understand that I'm not the direct reason why, because it's like so many people involved with geocaching that makes this thing work. You know, there's the people that place the geocaches and the creative geocaches I could never do, you know, to the type of people that, you know, maintain these geocaches and the people that volunteer to review geocaches. And then, you know, the people that build all the software for it, you know, there's like all these people that make this game work. What I prefer actually is to be anonymous and go into a geocaching event. I think like the first 15 minutes to 30 minutes when I go to a geocaching event, I don't say anything. I just kind of walk around, you know, I go and sign up. But then at some point, I got to put my name down or somebody asks where I'm from or something. And then the cat's out of the bag and it becomes a different experience. But I've had the best experiences, especially individual experiences with geocaches around the world. And I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to be able to travel to these events and to meet people from different cultures and backgrounds and be able to see places I've never experienced before. You know, just some highlights, like I went to Copenhagen, one of my first trips, and met with a retired police officer detective that drove me around the city and showed me all the interesting spots. You know, I've been to Germany multiple times, going to different lost places. I've been in like old abandoned World War II tunnels, you know, with geocachers, and they all know the best places to go. So I feel like I've gotten the highlight reel of geocaching around the world. Geocaches in Finland that are electronic, and like there's so many electronic geocaches, like one where you open it and the Christmas tree lights turn on an entire tree, you know, things like that that just blow my mind. And the fact that I get the opportunity to be the person that gets taken on some of those trips is so rewarding. I can deal with, you know, giving out tags at a geocaching event, you know, to 1,000 people. That's totally worth it to me. But I do like the individual experiences that I have with individual people. And those are the ones I experience, you know, one-on-one or with small groups.
When you think about the future, you know, maybe the next 20 years of geocaching, both the game and the company, what comes to mind for both of you?
If we look back 20 years ago and you had asked us that question, I don't think that we could have predicted, you know, where we are today and sort of what has been built and the impact and the ecosystem and basically what the community has come to represent and the game has come to represent. I think likewise, 20 years from now is a really, really long time. And so coming up with any sort of specifics, Jeremy might have some really creative ideas. But for me, it comes down to really like almost like big kind of principles. So as a company, I don't think that our mission will change. I think inspiring and enabling adventure, exploration, and community, I think is really core to who we are as a company and what we're trying to do, as well as who we are collectively as a community. I think that we can expect technology to continue changing as it always does. And as a company, you know, we're not planning to stand still. We are planning to take advantage of new technology as it comes and when it makes sense to do so, to extend and enhance the game of geocaching and what it means to people around the world. And I think the third thing is we recognize that geocaching is good for people to the extent that we can keep focused on getting people outside and inspiring them to do it in new and different ways. I think that's what you could expect to see 20 years from now in some form. But the specifics, I can't begin to speculate, but maybe Jeremy's got some ideas.
Well, I mean, the goal of the company is to have an adventure at every location. So it's one of those lofty goals that you can continue to strive for till the end of time. You might not necessarily have an adventure at every location, so you always have something to look forward to. Also, just considering that, you know, when we started the company, I was 28, now I'm going to be 48. So I don't know, you know, if I'm 68 years old, what that's going to look like. But I think the important thing is, you know, we've set the company in the direction, and we've been very serious about not changing that direction. You know, our goal is to get people to go outside using technology, create adventure. We want people to move. More today than ever, people are on their phones and they're into their social media and the Oculus now and like other VR applications where people are, you know, putting on and closing off the world and creating these other adventures in these alternate realities. And although I do actually enjoy it personally to be able to, you know, do that kind of escapism, it's not what humans were meant to do all the time. So, you know, as much as I like the book Ready Player One in the movie, I don't really want to get into this VR environment where we all live in, you know, single wide trailers stacked on top of each other. That's what I want, you know, to continue to strive for, is see what kind of technologies are out there that's available that we can use as a part of our tool chest to allow people to create engaging outdoor adventures. And get people moving and active in the real world. And, you know, what we've seen with this pandemic is that it is healthy to get outside. You know, as it's been getting colder and people are starting to move indoors, we're now seeing that the pandemic, people are getting sicker. That just shows how important being outside is and how encouraging people to be active and outdoors. It just makes for a better life. I just remember that first time I went geocaching and I had moved out to the Pacific Northwest, and I was basically on a mountain that had been completely cut down by timber. All the timber was gone, so it was mostly stumps. And that's, I would not have seen that environment and kind of had a more of appreciation for the outdoors by seeing that and being exposed to that. And I think that'll continue to, you know, be an issue moving forward, is, you know, making sure that we have a healthy world. And by doing that, we need to experience that world and not have our heads down in our phones and not have, you know, a VR helmet on and kind of like escape that reality and appreciate what's outside, because there's nothing that can substitute, you know, a walk in the woods.
Yeah, I'll credit Jeremy with the phrase, but we want people to be exposed. We want to enable people and inspire them to be exposed to actual reality as opposed to virtual reality.
Yeah, IRL in real life.
How about that? Jeremy Irish and Brian Roth, two of the co-founders of Geocaching HQ. I look forward to picking up our conversation in person at the 20th anniversary celebration. Do you have something that you would like to have us cover on the podcast in the new year? Send an email. podcast@geocaching.com is the address. We always appreciate when you share your ideas. And we want to wish you all the very best in 2021. I know I speak for all of my fellow HQ lackeys when I say we deeply appreciate your support this year. It is truly wonderful to see how geocaching has played such an uplifting role in so many of our lives, especially during these past several months. Have a safe new year from me and everyone at Geocaching HQ. Happy caching.